Good morning. Welcome. Somebody that saw me trying my artistic skills again, which I told you aren't very good, said, did you get mixed up? You used those notes last time. So, no, I didn't get mixed up. Maybe if you were here, I think that was November 2nd or something like that. Maybe I'll bring it in a little later. Until then, you can look at it. Okay, I'd like to tell you about someone. There was a father had three sons, and of these three sons, the one died at fairly young age. He had one son that I know of before he passed away, so he was a young married man. And so that left two sons, and this family operated as a fairly close family unit. Maybe more so than what a lot of us would tend to. But about the time, I'm a little unclear, but about the time they lived in New York City, and I hope you understand what I'm saying until I'm done, but they lived in New York City, and this father, and eventually with some time, this father with his two remaining sons, they were married, the one had children, and his nephew, orphan nephew, whatever you want to call him, chose to move from New York to Texas. And they settled in Texas, and they'd done well in New York, and they did even better in Texas. Farming went really well for them. But over time, the oldest son said he was called to go to Mexico. And so he basically did whatever it took to put his, how would you say, I'm not sure if I should say liquid form, but he liquidated. He made it so that he could take all his possessions either with him or he sold them. And he headed out. This was before his father was still living. He would have been an older man. And he moved to Mexico City. And he settled down there. And his nephew, I guess I'll call him his orphan nephew, he seems to have raised him, went with him. And they both settled down in Mexico City, and that's where they lived, more or less for the rest of their lives. There was a short time where this man and his nephew went down to Belize. And what was interesting is a lot of people that look at this man after he passed away said he was one of the greatest men of faith they ever knew. But what's interesting is I've often wondered if the people, and I didn't have a chance to interview any of them, but if his dad, if the other people he lived with at the time when he went to Mexico City, thought of him that way. I really don't have any way of knowing. But you have any idea who I'm talking about? Have you ever heard of this man? Yeah, thank you. I changed the location purposefully to keep you listening a little better, because if I would have said Abraham, some of you would have said, well, we know him so well that what can you say new about him? So, you can find this in Genesis 9, 10, 11, through there. And in case you question some of my facts, it seems as distractions in my home get added to, which blessings I should call them, not just distractions, somehow my clock still holds the same amount of hours in the day, so I'm not sure if I feel as coherent as I wish I did. So pray for me. But if you go to Genesis and you study on Abraham, it just amazes me that, you know, Terah, after his son Haran died, he took Nahor and Abraham, which both seemed to be married at that point, and Lot, moved to Haran, which was where they had been at the time, was sort of the capital of culture, civilization at that point. And so they move out to Texas. I guess a good place, but nothing that special. And before, it tells us in Genesis there, if you do your math, it tells us that Terah was 75 when Abraham was born, and it tells us that Abraham was 75 when he left Haran and went to Canaan. So, and Terah died at, I think it was 205 or somewhere in there. So Terah was evidently still alive when Abraham left and went to Canaan. What do you think he thought about his son? It doesn't say that. It would seem to me that Abraham's family had some knowledge of God, because I'll base that on when Isaac needed a son. All right, when Isaac needed a wife, Abraham's son Isaac, when he needed a wife, his servant was sent back to Haran. Why? Why not just marry, if they were idolaters, why not marry another idol worshiper? So it seemed, I would speculate, I can't say for certain, that there was some God knowledge in Abraham's broader family. Maybe that's why they moved from Ur to Haran. I don't know that. But at the same time, you had a person who, it tells us there in Genesis, I think it's 10, the first part, it tells us that Abraham, God called Abraham and said, get you away from your family and from your kindred and go to Canaan. And I think that would be equivalent to one of us deciding to pack up and probably move to Mexico City in a lot of people's eyes. And I don't know what Tira thought about that. I can't tell you, but today we look back at Abraham and we consider him the father of the faithful. You know, I think we skip a lot when we read these about these Bible characters. We fail to realize that living that life of faith wasn't easy. Do you think it was? You think it was any easier for Abraham to pack up and leave Haran? I don't know what his family thought about him. Do you think it was any easier for him to follow God than it is for you to follow God today? I don't know. Maybe you don't do this, but in my comfortable little view of Abraham, yeah, he had some hurdles offering Isaac, but you know, he was a strong man of faith. He just did the right thing in a way. He went, I don't think so. I think he struggled just as much as any of us do. So keep that in mind as I talk about this. I'm going to title the message this morning, Walking By, and then I have a couple dots and a question mark. Walking By. So I'm thinking about walking. Do y'all know how to walk? Probably anybody that can talk and hear me knows how to walk, right? You know how to walk, Jesse? Is it hard work? It's not. Okay. Walking is fairly commonplace. We don't think a lot of it, do you? So you know what? The interesting thing about walking is basically it's leaning forward and catching yourself. Do you ever think about that? I mean, if you just lean way back, it's pretty hard to walk because you can't get your foot down. So it's basically walking. And there's a couple things I'd like for you to think a minute. What does it take for somebody to walk? What are some things it takes? If I want to walk, what does it take? Okay, balance. Walking requires balance. Anything else? Balance, coordination. Maybe I'll sort of put that on the same line. They're connected, even though they are a little bit different. Anything else? I'm sorry, I missed that one. Ambition, energy, so, okay. Anything else? Faith? Anything else? Okay. All right, we'll hook that up. Desire to move. Well, I thought maybe... You are skipping some obvious ones. Okay. Well, this might. Muscles, sure. What else? Two legs. I was thinking of feet, but you could say that a lot of ways. Do what? A pumping heart. So, yeah, we could get real nitty-gritty, couldn't we? So, I don't know, just my short list, not that this anything better about mine, is feet, balance, knowledge. I thought, I almost wrote down sight, but then yesterday I was picking up a lift at about 4:30, so it was getting dark, and there's this shed, absolutely no windows, and all the doors were closed, and I had to walk across this thing to get to where I wanted to go. I stupidly shut the door and started out, and the further I went, the darker this thing got. So finally, I didn't have sight, or at least very little sight. I was there like this, walking through there, because I knew there was a lift somewhere, and I thought it might not look too good if I tried to bull it over. So it doesn't necessarily have to see. You have blind people that they know where to walk. They can do it. Then others, so I had balance, knowledge, judgment, and practice, right? Does it take practice? You know, my little daughter, she don't know how to walk, and it'll be quite a while before she starts practicing, thankfully. But when you see somebody begin to walk, they're not that great at it. You take any of us, even, they tell me if you would lay me flat on my back and not let me get up for, I don't know how long it would take, 6 months to a year. You hear of adults needing to learn to walk again. I don't know what that all takes or what causes that. So practice is part of it. Now I want to ask you something. What happens if I or someone else relies wholly on the abilities of their feet? They just take their balance for granted, and the knowledge, they know that the floor is, they know how the floor is, so they just totally tune out of walking at all times. What will happen to that person? They never pay any attention to their feet. You'll stumble. So what's interesting is it's subconscious. You know, I don't have to focus on these steps to walk them, because in my peripheral vision, I know they're there, and it's sort of a subconscious thing. And I don't have to look down and see, okay, now that step is down this far. Now, it'd be a bit different if I didn't know. Let's say that one of these steps was 3 inches tall, and the other one was 14 inches, and I had never done them before. I would have to pay more attention. And even more so, I thought one of probably the most places that I like to go is, say, a trail in the woods, especially a steep mountain trail. You have to pay attention to what you're doing, or you'll not have a good walk, let's say it that way. So walking by, how do I walk? And of course, I'm not thinking necessarily just physical. I like this small excerpt from Shepherd of the Hills. I thought he said it well. In the hills of life, there are two trails. One lies along the higher sunlit fields where those who journey see afar, and the light lingers even when the sun is down. And one leads to the lower ground where those who travel as they go look always over their shoulders with eyes of dread, and gloomy shadows gather long before the day is done. Now, the author of this sounded like he was talking about a trail. The reality is he was talking about different people and the choices they were making through life. And maybe I'd like to refine it just a little bit more. I'm going to ask a question, and I hope you can take this right. Some of these things, I am a human being, and so when I have a coin, I can only look at one side at one time, right? And when you're talking about spiritual things, I'm not sure it stops at two sides. So I'm not necessarily saying I can look at this complete package this morning. But one side of this coin is it possible to sin without doing anything wrong? What would you say? Is it possible to sin without doing anything wrong? I get it. It's a bad question, or I'm not sure if bad, but hard to answer. Well, thank you. Romans 14, 23, the last part of the verse, says this: "For whatsoever is not of faith is sin." Whatsoever is not of faith is sin. So, if I take that verse just the way it says it, it's telling me that for me to put in, and Proverbs would back this up, it calls the plowing of the wicked is sin. For me to put in garage doors, is that right or wrong? We can't say it's wrong, can we? At the same time, if I'm doing it out of pride, if I'm doing it to somehow get glory for myself, if I'm doing it to promote me, my agenda, or make myself look like somebody, it's sin, even though the action itself wouldn't be called wrong, right? You follow me? And I see this as extremely crucial, and I guess it's a big concern I have for our church, even though I'm not trying to say we're bad. I'm just saying it's something I think we have to face up to honestly. And I also think this subject is one that the broader scope of Mennonites, if I guess I'll just say it that way, struggle with a lot. You know, some feel, and I know I've beat around on this, some aspects of this subject before, but some feel very strongly against discussing, much less even being open to changing any traditional practices, for example. Whereas others go around asking, well, what's wrong with that? That's not sin. And you know what? I personally feel both, I don't know if we should call them camps, people, whatever you want, both are seemingly missing the very important fact that in the things that the Bible does not clearly spell out, my motives matter a whole lot more than what I actually do or don't do. Can you follow me? So I want to be clear. I did use this earlier. If you weren't here, I won't spend a lot of time on it. But basically, think of your life, the choices, things you face, opportunities of life, as a boat on a sea. And you're trying to come into a safe place, a harbor. And so I use the lighthouse, thinking of the lighthouse as God's revealed will. Those things that the Bible clearly says should be this way, should be that way. Love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them that hate you, for example. Is there any room left? If you don't like that statement, who are you arguing with, me or God? If you don't, you know, if I don't want to bless my enemies, excuse me, that's a problem with Joe, not with God's word. Excuse me, not with a lack of understanding. So, and then in these others, I was going to ask this question later, but I'll just ask it now. So if two Christians disagree or struggle with each other, can it ever be in the realm of God's revealed will? I would say it can be because we're human beings, and so, but technically it shouldn't be. May I say that? I think it can be because of how we tick or talk, but really, if two people are sincere about serving God, they're reading the same Bible, they should be able to understand God's revealed will the same way. And that's going to take desire, and some things have to be lined up, and sometimes I lack them, and sometimes maybe somebody else does. Excuse me. But in that, I think where most, I hope most, at least if we have any struggles, disagreements with each other, I hope most of this happens, I don't really want to say lower, but using these things as marker lights or buoys. So you have these things where that God gave us. They're a blessing. They're here for us. For example, the principles of God's word. But you know what happens, and I mentioned this briefly in that message a little over a month ago, is I may, shall I say, overfocus on one principle. You may overfocus on another principle, and then we come together and try to reconcile it. It don't work too well because we're both determined that our principle is the greater one. If, and this is where I think we get on the wrong foot with each other so often, or I do at least, is that in the things that the Bible does not clearly spell out, God is much more interested in the motives of my heart, the reason why I think the way I do the way I do, than he is actually in what I'm doing. And I don't mean to undermine or say that God is disinterested. I think after the last message, I heard of at least one person that says, is he saying that God doesn't care about my life? No, absolutely. If God sees a sparrow fall, he cares about whether you have enough food to eat and things and the decisions you make. What I'm saying is it doesn't make you any less Christian to teach school or to go VS work somewhere else. I'm not saying God doesn't care, but I am saying it doesn't determine whether you're Christian or not. So each step I take takes me somewhere on either a downward or an upward journey. Now, realize the journey is made up of many steps. So just because I may at times take a downward step doesn't say I have to continue. But each step is taking me somewhere. So a quick review, what decides or dictates my responses to life and the things of life? Can anybody tell me? What are the four things that determine how you respond to life? It's been a while since I did this, so. Okay, let's just run out. Instinct, temperament, experience, and then the one that animals don't have choice. Those are the things that you are every day using to decide how to relate to the things that happen to you. Now I want to ask you this. If in my spiritual walk, I'm not talking my physical walk, if in my spiritual walk I rely on my instinct, if I rely on my experiences, if I rely on my temperamental makeup, I can then have what I will call a spiritual walk, but guess what? I'll be doing it in a habitual way. Do you follow me? I'll be doing what I do based on the way I think about myself, not on seeking God. And so consider this. If my responses to my spiritual life are based on the instinct, just my first thought, if the way I relate to life and spiritual things is based on my temperament, if the way I relate to life and spiritual things is based on my past experiences, what's going to happen to me? Can I call that a spiritual walk? Also, have you ever thought of how humans are given to extremes? Maybe you're not. But I've seen people that I would say they're trusting to a fault. Have you ever seen anybody like that? They just believe everybody and everything. Then on the same, well, sometimes in the same house, you have somebody that's the other way. They're so skeptical you about can't get them to believe anything. I would propose to you that those are natural responses. And if we're going to successfully live the Christian life, we have to recognize our weakness. You know, for example, if you are one that distrusts and doubts and questions and struggles with just trusting, you are going to take some things I say in the rest of this message today and go home and totally misapply what I meant to say because you weren't, that's what you were listening for. By the same token, if you're a person that is more just open, trustful, whatever, you may do the exact same thing in a different area. So coming back to the question, who's directing your steps? Do you decide how to walk? Is your knowledge, or maybe I should say my, is it my knowledge, my experience, my feelings, my preference is what decides where I go and how I relate to life? Or is it my peers, my friends, my parents, the church? Or is there something greater and better and safer than all of these? How do I walk? How do you walk? Let's see. I'd like for you to turn to 2 Corinthians 5. I'm going to read 1 Corinthians 13. You turn to 2 Corinthians 5. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 12 says this. For now we see through a glass darkly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then shall I know even as also I am known. Now that verse fascinates me, and it gives me 3 points. What I see, what I think I know, is not as clear as what I think it is. Have you ever seen those mirrors in the cars that say objects in the mirror are closer than they appear? Why does it say that? Well, it's simply because if you've never backed up a car and you jump in there and you take that this is a factual picture of what's right behind me, the scale is radically different. And you go speeding backwards, you're going to crash before you think you will if you don't know how to read a mirror. And so in the same way, Paul there in 1 Corinthians chapter 13 is saying that I look through a glass darkly, and I struggle with this. So sometimes things can look so clear, so clear-cut. I know that it's this way. But Paul is saying, you know, we look through a glass darkly in this life. Things, objects, and mirror may closer than they appear. That's the first. The second one is that even what I should know the most fully is not fully knowable by me. Okay, so in this life, who can you know the most fully? Anyone? Who do you know the best? Be another way of saying it. You know me the best? That shouldn't be hard. Come on. Who do you know the best? Your wife? Okay. Well, that's great. That should be a close second, but I thought it would be yourself. Shouldn't you? Shouldn't you know the motives of your own heart? And yes, a spouse, that's a great help, and I thank God for them. But finally, there's even times that I can deceive my wife for a time, right? I try to over her birthday. I mean, I hope that's a good time. Some extent, pretend I'm not doing much when maybe I am. Who knows? And it's coming up here, so now she's going to be all suspicious I messed up this year. But you follow me? But what's interesting is Paul is saying that as well as we can know ourselves, if we're honest, there's still finally some portions of my heart that I will just never totally be able to dig out. I don't know if you've hit that barrier, but I have, and it's not fun. It seems like if you would just pray hard enough and be serious enough and be honest enough, you could totally decide, am I on this side or that side of something or other? But sometimes you just can't tell. Then the third one is, a time is coming when I will see myself and all things as they are. So I guess you can take that as scary or as a blessing, because I take it as a blessing. And you know, honestly, as we go through this life, as we walk the path God has for us, there's just some times we don't know and that we mess up even with the best of intentions. I had to think of some men that were climbing a mountain. I think there was four. So they climbed up this mountain, and they went up, and as they got higher on this mountain, there was a big snow slope. And so they sort of came up. You know how mountains are. I guess we don't have this kind in Arkansas. But as you come up, they're sort of like a peak like this. And so they wanted to go up to another peak, but they were climbing up the steep side. Then they were going to travel up what they call the ridge to the very peak. And as they came, there was some further down, and then there was one ahead blazing the trail. And as he came up to that ridge, that crest, the ones below could see that crest was actually a shelf of snow that just went out over the ridge and was empty space below it. He could not see that. He was coming up, and it just looked like this thing stopped, just broke over the angle. And so the three men below started yelling and hollering for him to stop because they saw his danger. And if he continued on, he was going to break through or break that whole piece off, and away he would go. Well, he heard him. He saw him motioning, and he thought they wanted him to check something out, so he purposely went out there to see what it was, and away he went to his death. You know, I think sometimes, I'm not saying spiritual death necessarily, but I think that can happen in life to well-meaning people, right? We're trying to do the best with what we know. Maybe we even ask counsel, maybe we misinterpret it, but we take what we think and we try to do the best we know, and it still messes up. Proverbs 16:25 says it this way. It says, there is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof is the way of death. It's one thing if you fall off a mountain and die physically. What's much sadder in some ways is if you are taking what seems the right way to you and you fall off a mountain spiritually. That word seemeth, there in Proverbs 16:25, that word seemeth, if you look it up, it means that straight, basically. It looks clear. It looks like this makes sense. It looks like this goes where I want to go. It looks like this is logical, for us men at least. From what I can see, from what I comprehend, it's convenient, it's right, it's fair, it's just, it's pleasing, so I do it. You know, in these ways, this seeming way looks right. I think you could say it feels right. It fits right. And yet it goes in the wrong direction. So that poses a question, how in the world can I know if I'm on the right path or the wrong path? Here I need to be real careful. Because almost without fail, those of us who need to trust in faith and are facing that trust battle are going to find it easy to doubt, right? They're going to doubt when they should just simply trust. Those who should be questioning their standing before God and the motives of their heart often seemingly find it easy to think that they're trusting when in reality they're negligent. So I can't decide that for you, right? Are you somebody who faces a battle of trust? You just need to go before God and tell him, I struggle. I just give myself. I trust you. Or are you one that should be unsettled and in looking into your heart? You know, both of those natural ways of walking are wrong. Both are doing the wrong thing when they follow their natural tendency. If you're a fearful person and you worry and you fret and you fear and you follow that fear, you're doing the worst thing possible you can for your spiritual life. On the other hand, if you're sitting there all cozy and cuddly and saying, well, there's nothing wrong, and you're unwilling to look into your heart, you're doing the very worst thing you could be doing for your spiritual life. You know, if when I ask the question, how in the world am I supposed to know if I'm on the right path or the wrong path, If you just felt overwhelmed by that question, confused about life, then you likely are somebody that needs to fight this battle of trust. If, on the other hand, when you're asked, how in the world can you know whether you're on the right or the wrong path? And you say, oh, it's not hard to know. Maybe you should reconsider. Jeremiah 10, verse 23 says this, O Lord, I know the way of a man is not in himself. He goes on to say, it is not in man that walketh to direct his steps. Basically, God, through Jeremiah, is saying, it's impossible for me to decide what the best plan is for me, just myself. I don't have it here, that wisdom, that foresight, that knowledge. So let me ask you a question. Have you ever seen anyone who just trusted themselves, their own thoughts, their views, and their conclusions, and made a smash of it in life? Have you? I just went back. I had to think. I think Eve was the first one to do that, right? She listened to the serpent. She looked, and she trusted in her own ability to figure this out and messed up. Adam was the second one. He knew what Eve did. He knew that she did wrong, but he decided that he would, rather than lose her, he'll do the same thing. Cain was maybe the third one. I don't know. But I think probably everybody does that in their own way in some place and time. I'm not saying you totally smash your life, but we can get awful close. We could bring it into the New Testament. Think of Saul before he was Paul. Why did God, Christ, knock him down with a light and tell him, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? It is hard for thee to kick against the pricks. It's because Saul was doing what was right in his own mind. Wholly convinced. John Mark, and you, I don't know if it needs to stop in a modern day, you can stop it with me. In fact, I wonder if this isn't the primary way that we walk wrongly, is by trusting ourselves. Okay. One question, then I want to read 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 1 through 9. So a question is, are you burdened by your natural tendencies? We could call them your defaults. Are you burdened by your natural tendencies? Let's read 2 Corinthians 5, verse 1. For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God and house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. So he says, we know if this body would be taken away, as a Christian, I've got a better place to go to, a better building. Verse 2. Notice this, for in this we, I groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our house, which is from heaven. If so be that being clothed, we shall not be found naked or lacking. For we that are in this tabernacle, that means in this physical body, do groan, being burdened, not for that we should be unclothed. In other words, not that we would just have nothing to offer, but that we'd be clothed, having no lack, that mortality, limitations, might be swallowed up of life, eternal, I add. Verse 5, now he that hath wrought us for the selfsame thing is God, who also hath given us unto the earnest of the Spirit. Therefore we are always confident, knowing that whilst we're at home in the body, we are absent for the Lord. Then verse 7 is what a Christian needs to do, for we walk by faith, not by sight. We are confident, I say, and willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. Wherefore we labor that whether present or absent, we may be accepted of him. You know, friends, this morning, if I'm doing what makes sense to me, and that's where I stop and start with my decisions and things, it won't work. I don't care how sincere I am. There's a teaching out there that sincerity is all that matters, and I want to be clear, sincerity matters an awful lot, but if you can be ever so sincere, if you don't have God working in your life, it's still a mess. Still a mess. So, if it's not in me, in what I see, in what I understand, and what I comprehend to direct my steps, in what or whom is it? If I can't trust even myself, whom can I trust? So, I don't mean this in a discouraging way, but let's just think a little bit. Has anyone ever gone wrong because of trusting their parents and or grandparents to direct their steps? A lot of people, right? Let's go back to the Bible. It's probably the best illustration there. Think of Jacob following Rebekah's instructions. Did he reap for that? He woke up with the wrong wife, right? And I think it continued on. What about Nadab, Jeroboam's son? It tells us specifically he continued on in the sins of his father with negative results. We have Ahaziah followed Ahab and Jezebel, again, with negative results. And we could bring that to modern day, even though I won't bother. So let's go to the next one. Has anyone ever gone wrong by allowing their spouse to direct their steps? I don't know if I should say, but in a way, that's what Adam did with Eve. He followed the choice she made, so he followed her into sin. We could go Abraham and Sarah when she got Hagar involved because she wasn't able to have children. We could have Solomon following his strange wives into idol worship, seemingly. We have Jehoram, that was Jehoshaphat, a godly man's son, who married Ahab's daughter, basically following her in Baal worship. So, absolutely. Okay, the next one. Has anyone ever gone wrong by allowing their friends or peers to direct their steps? Can I just rely on my friends' peer group? They say. We beat that one up hard, don't we, young people? At least probably most times we say, oh, you can't follow them. Well, that's true. I think of Lot living there in Sodom. While his state is a bit of a mystery in some ways, it definitely didn't work out for his family. Rehoboam was another one that lost basically a lot of what he could have had. Peter, when he was there and got carried away with the dissension of the Jews by not eating with the Gentiles. Okay, has anyone ever gone wrong by allowing their spiritual leaders to direct their steps? What do you say to that one? Have you thought of that? The first one that comes to my mind is Aaron when he made the golden calf. Now, I know Israel came and asked him for something, so I don't know. Maybe I'm not being fair to him. At the same time, he says he put it in the fire and it came out, and he said, here's the God that brought you out of Egypt. So, how about the prophet? Do you remember the prophet that was sent to Jeroboam and told him what judgment God was going to fall upon him and how that altar split apart and Jeroboam's hand dried up and all that? Then when he was on the way home, this older prophet came and convinced him to go do something that God had told him not to do. What happened to him? A lion killed him, right? After he left, the lion killed him in the way. So yes, especially in that culture, an older prophet was somebody to be reckoned with. Don't just run away from him. I had to think of the Christians that also got carried away with Peter there when Paul rebuked him. We could go to the epistles of John, where he talks about Diotrephes. Remember him? I think Ernie preached a message, I don't know, a year ago about Diotrephes. He loved to have preeminent in the church, and evidently there was a faction of the church that got carried away with him. So again, a spiritual position of leadership. Okay, the last one here. Has anyone ever gone wrong by allowing the church to direct their steps? Somebody want to tell me? Okay, so here I do realize maybe depends how broad we want to make the definition of church, but yes, absolutely, a church can go wrong and so therefore direct people wrongly. It's made up of people. A couple I have to think of is the Corinthian church. They were actually proud that they could accept somebody that was immoral as part of the church. So could you have trusted the Corinthian church to give you spiritual guidance at that stake? I don't think so. What about the churches in Revelation, Thyatira, Sardis, and Laodicea churches? They were pretty much doing the same thing, different aspects of it. But again, not churches you would want giving you spiritual direction because they weren't where they wanted to be spiritually. And then the one Vernon mentioned, I had to think of that too. So as the church sort of became established, it sort of phased off into, with Constantine and all that stuff, it sort of phased off into what we call the Catholic Church today. And I can't maybe sit here and tell you exactly which year that church became a false church, but definitely, you want to be part of the Catholic Church today? And what's interesting is there are many, maybe even sincere people in the Catholic Church that their thought is that they're simply doing what they're told to do. Is that going to work before God? I'm glad I can let them before God in how he sorts through all that. I don't need to know. But you know, that comes even closer to home than that. If I am predominantly saying that my salvation is based on the church group I'm part of, whether I say that or think that or operate that way, I've got a problem. You know, other people are only safe guides when they wholly follow Christ. Every step of choice, they face the same temptations I do to take the downward way. You know, other people, be they friends, parents, leaders, and yes, even whole brotherhoods, can and do make mistakes and wrong choices. Other people are only safe when they follow Christ. And I love what Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 1. It says, be ye followers of me. Did he stop there? Even as I am also of Christ. So if you see somebody walking and you say, yes, that looks like Christ in action, by all means, follow them. At the same time, don't just swallow anything they tell you or anything, any counsel they give. Compare it with the scripture. Just because I might hopefully follow Christ in one area of my life does not mean that now I am unconditionally able to be followed in all other areas. I'm human. You know, I want to be very clear. It is not that God will not and does not speak through other people, parents, leaders, the church. But if these do not match up with and support his written word, look out. And I say this carefully. You can take it out of context, and I don't have a lot of time to correct that. But if anyone is adding a lot of details to God's already revealed will, look out. That's happened in history many, many times. While all of these people, organization, or the church, can be aids, none of them may be a primary way to determine what is right and what is wrong. If they become the primary way I determine God's direction, I have a problem. There must be some added aspect to discerning truth, another step in finding the right way, the right path in my walk. So how can my steps be directed in complete safety? Where can I turn? To whom can I look? I'd like to say there's only one completely safe person who can direct our steps unfailingly. 2 Samuel 22:31, and then repeated in Psalm 18, verse 30, says this, as for God, his way is perfect. The word of the Lord is tried. He's a buckler to all them that trust him. In Acts 17, we won't read that, but in Acts 17, we have an account of some very different responses to disagreements. So we have Paul and those traveling with him coming to Thessalonica, and he says he spent 3 weeks going to the synagogue, preaching, teaching. And there were some people converted, but it seems like the majority of the Jews decided, it says, became envious, and they actually chased him out of town. They didn't stop there. He went to another town. They came to that town and chased him out. That's how rabid they were against truth. That's one response, two choices. Then the other one is the other town Paul went to. It talks about the Jews in Berea. And I would say those people chose the higher path. In verse 11 of Acts 17, it says, they were more noble and searched the scriptures daily to see if these things were so. So how do you do it? You don't like what I say or what somebody else says, do you say, well, let's shut them up one way or the other? Or do you search the scriptures? You know, we as humans are inherently lazy. Even those of us that look like we have a lot of activity are still lazy people. Do you know that? Maybe you disagree with that. When I say lazy, just a lot of activity doesn't mean that that person's not lazy. It just means that he's busy. But you can be busy lazy. Anyway, I'll let that there. But we are lazy in that we look for ways to have our steps directed in safety without having to sacrifice all and invest all in a daily walk with God. Have you ever done this? I don't know, for myself, I say it, I love math. So we would like a formula that if I did this and this and this and this, then I would be right with God. And we look for this. We look for ways to do this. If I'm part of this group, if I hook my wagon to this doctrine, this theology, this way of doing things, now surely I'll be right with God. And it's not saying that that doctrine, that way of doing things is bad, but it is saying that that way by itself can never get you to heaven. You know, in a physical walk, we can learn, we can train ourselves to walk without conscious thought. Even on a difficult trail, you walk that 100 times. Pretty soon you know where the tough spots are and don't have to watch your feet. But in the spiritual realm, I would like to propose to you that if our walk does not involve conscious thought and deliberation, it is a walk on the lower path, not the higher pathway. There is nothing like an automatic or a trained Christian. It is a conscious choice, Christians only. And like I said earlier, if we disagree, I sure hope it's not on God's revealed will, because it means somebody's wrong. If we disagree, hopefully it's on the way of, maybe I look at one thing heavier. I say this principle is greater than that one, and you say the other way around. Maybe it's our emphasis on prayer. Maybe it's in the way the Word speaks, how we listen to authority, how we ask counsel, how we consider circumstances, how important are my own inclinations and gifts. How do we go about this? So how do you decide how you feel about issues that the Bible is not clear on? And I was thinking, trying hard to think of something I would dare use. Because potentially whenever I use an illustration, some people that, if you like it, if you like my illustration, you might go home and say, hey, so he's sort of for what I am. If you don't like it, you're going to go home and say, he was promoting something when I absolutely wasn't trying to do that. But at the same time, with all the dangers involved, I think it's still, I'd like to make my points. I still found two that I thought might be safe. If they're not safe, you can rebuke me, and I'm okay with that. But how many of you, and I've heard some conversations, and I don't mean to take any stand on this issue here at all today. I simply need illustrations. Is that clear with everybody? And you understand? Okay, so how many of you, if I would suggest that we as a ministry would say, well, we wonder if we should consider having mixed seating for our church services? How many of you would have an opinion on that? I'm not asking you to express your opinion, but would you have a thought on it? There's quite a few of you would. The ladies aren't going to tell you whether they do or not. Well, maybe you know your man does and you need to support that, so good deal. So a fair amount of us would have some opinion, either for or against. And please, this is only illustration purposes, right? I have to read the fine print a couple times here. But may I ask you, since you're mostly over here, may I ask you what, if you know how you feel about that, can you dig a little deeper, and don't tell me here, but maybe tell yourself, how did you determine how to feel about that? How did you determine how you feel about that subject? Let's take a minute and think about it. What formed your thought, my thought on it? Maybe I use another one. I won't ask for anything on this one, but another one. I recently had a friend in another area, and it was almost amusing listening to him, and that was in the subject of musical instruments. He got so strong, he basically said that with the way Scripture says, you could say scripturally that you have to use them, but you sure couldn't say scripturally that you may not. That's what he said. Now, I'm pretty sure, maybe even in this audience, I could find some people that would say the exact 100% opposite thing. And again, this is illustration purposes only. I have no agenda in this. I just want you to follow. So, is one of these, if you disagree with that 100%, is he less of a Christian than you are? Are you less of a Christian than he is? He was pretty strong. He may think you are. I don't know. I didn't ask him. Yeah, he basically said there's no biblical basis for having guidelines on them. So who is right? And humanly speaking, they can't both be, can they? So using those as illustrations, how do you form your convictions and the personal guides that I hope you have in your life? Is the way you approach these things, this is just the way we always did it. I mean, why do we even consider having mixed seating? Just, we've done it this way. It worked for Grandpa, it worked for Dad, it'll work for me. Is it, well, that's how the church says, is it just where I'm comfortable? don't take any effort to keep things, well, at least not as much, maybe to keep things like they are, is trying to figure out a positive change, so let's just let it alone. On the flip side of this, I'm not just trying to hit one camp. The flip side of this is my thought on this based on a reaction. So that church does it. They did it that way, and I feel sort of negative about them and the way they operate. So, yeah, I'm open to this change because, after all, they sure aren't more spiritual because they do it. Is it possibly, and I have to talk to myself on this one, I don't want to hurl this at anybody else, but is it possibly a bit of rebellion? Some of us do have that running deep. Is it just what I like? I just like it better. I don't really have any basis for it, but it's just how I like it. Or is it a consuming passion for Christ and His Word? Furthermore, are my thoughts and opinions on this or anything else formed by a reaction or a defense of a traditional practice? Are my thoughts and opinions formed by a careful study of God's Word, remember the Bereans, and a desire to please Him? Or is it a desire to either follow myself in whatever way that is? And one thing that's very scary about this subject is I think every last person that understands what I'm talking about here could say and would say, if you were put in the corner on any of these things, that you have right motives for it. Every last one of us is smart enough to reason around to where I have good motives, and if there's a lack in motive, it's somewhere else. So, you know, this is never going to work if I'm going to think somebody else needs to do it. And be honest, because finally I have to, the only way this is going to work is if I start with myself. So what is the actuality of my opinions? Is it based on a desire to just totally glorify God with my life and in my body? Or is it based on a desire to somehow protect or promote my thing in some ways? Okay, Proverbs 3 is the last scripture I want to read here. I have, a couple verses. Nine things in understanding how God, what it takes to walk by faith. Let me say it that way. Nine things it takes to walk by faith. Proverbs 3, verse 1. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them upon thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. So thou shalt find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge Him, and He shall direct thy paths. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord, and depart from evil. It shall be health to thy navel, and marrow to thy bones. Honor the Lord with thy substance, and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst with new wine. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, neither be weary of His correction. For whom the Lord loveth, He correcteth, even as a father the son in whom He delighteth. So in looking at these 12 verses, I came up with nine things that it takes to walk by faith. The first one in verse 1, my son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. If you're going to serve God today, if you're going to walk by faith, you have to use your memory. Forget not. You have to focus. You have to think on. You have to make part of yourself God's Word and just give yourself to it. Verse 3 has the next one. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thy heart. Sort of close to what I just said, but in this one I have constantly meditate. You know, some of us, your mind can be a pretty bad enemy, can't it? I don't know if your mind has ever been your enemy or not, but it's been mine. You know, one way to control a runaway mind is to do this. Constantly meditate. Just give yourself. Let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them around thy neck. Write them on the table of thine heart. Okay, then the third one, verse 5. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding. And on this one I have a deliberate choice. I mentioned that earlier. It's not doing what comes naturally. It's not fearing when you feel like fearing. It's doing I shouldn't say the opposite. It's seeking God when you feel fearful. When you should be questioning things, it's seeking God rather than just being complacent. Then in verse 6, in all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. Again, thinking of conscious effort. In all thy ways. So it doesn't matter what I'm doing today. What does matter is, am I acknowledging God today? 7. Be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. So I have 2 in that verse. The first one is humility. If you're going to walk in faith, you have to be humble. And directly connected with that is also you have to turn away from evil, shunning evil. And he says that brings health to our physical body, much more our spiritual body. Okay, verse 9. Honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of thine increase. Here we have to acknowledge a greater in the use of everything I have. You know what I have, even that dollar that I spend on a drink, I'm not saying it's wrong, but am I doing it for the greater good of God's kingdom? As we do that, he says, we'll have more than plenty. And then verse 11, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor be weary of his correction. This is one I hate, but accepting of discipline and correction is another aspect of walking by faith. Just accepting discipline and correction, not running away from it. Then the last one, verse 12, for whom the Lord loveth, he correcteth, even as a son in the father, the son in whom he delighteth. And the one I have here is have a long view of life and circumstances. You know, if I'm obsessed with things of the moment, and that can happen to me so easy, and I'm here thinking about this, and I forget that God is much more concerned about where I'm at from a year, 10 years, than he is about the struggle I'm facing right now. I'm missing it. Okay, lastly, what are some indicators of how I am walking? So let's say that I feel I have my T's crossed, my I's checked, or dotted. Everything's on the good. What are some ways that I should potentially realize I may be on the wrong track? Number one, I think Steve mentioned that. I may have mentioned it since then, Steve Strike, when he was here. But that is, am I defensive? Am I defensive? And again, I say that to myself because it's so easy. You can be defensive before you knew what happened sometimes. But am I defensive? There's just no room for defensiveness in a Christian life. Sort of building on that one, it's not really a second one, but do I become irritated and want to discount and demean those who disagree or question me? In other words, what I'm saying is, if I'm in a conversation or if somebody comes and approaches me about a need in my life, do I immediately want to point out all the things that are wrong in their life? Look out if you find yourself doing that. At least I need to. The second one, test, is can I objectively consider the thoughts and ideas of others? Hopefully, I'm the main one that struggles with this, but have you ever found yourself answering, or maybe I shouldn't say answering, but trying to correct what somebody's saying before they're done saying it? That's not objectively listening. If they're still talking, can you let them finish their thought and then consider the thought before you reply? Third test, am I broken before God? This is one I had to experience here fairly recently. And what I mean by it is sometimes we can get to the place where we might have these feelings of panic, desperation. I have to know. I just got to figure this out. And that verse always comes to me, be still and know that I am God. Can I just hold still? Let God work. And maybe it won't be at the time I thought I needed an answer, but can I let him answer? And the fourth test is very closely to that. Can I patiently wait on God to sort things out? You know, sometimes in this life, to be honest, things look terribly messed up. But I still believe that if I'm walking by faith, I can just patiently wait on God to work through things rather than me having to try to force every issue. And the last one, fifth. Am I willing to do what I feel God is asking of me, even if it's not popular and unappreciated? In other words, can I step out? I'm not saying rebelliously now here at all. I'm saying brokenly, can I still do what God asks me to do, even though I know people are going to question and say he's dumb? So do you know how to walk? Do I know how to walk? Do I walk by sight or do I walk by faith? Each step I take takes me somewhere. Let's kneel for prayer.